Session number 5868, Horton Mundi, part 50.
He said, if you ever get out of this, he said, tell me mum, won't you? I says, yes, I'll tell her, I'll tell her. But I couldn't, I didn't know who he was, I couldn't tell. I said, yeah, I'll tell her. Well, within a minute of that, a minute or so of that, I'd lit his fag, dropped out of his mouth, and he said, oh, God, help me. And that was the end of that. But then, of course, that only left, what of us then? Three of us alive then, out of that. And then, bugger if they didn't have another barrage again later in the afternoon, people. They'd got tons and tons of shells to throw away. They must have blew anything and everything to smithereens. Was that the front door?
No, it's me.
Oh. Now, all that barrage that they put on our people, I'll bet they didn't miss a square yard of that ground all around them wires and barbed wire and between the two lines. Now, there was all our chaps that had been wounded, killed and wounded, that were laying all out there. They must have been blue to ribbons, mustn't they? Must have been blew all to pieces. You fancy them shells, big uns and little uns, crashing into that barbed wire where chaps perhaps lay there, perhaps just only got a small wound and couldn't get out.
What? So let's take the story on from there then. What happened later on?
Well, later on, after the next heavy barrage, we were lucky. None of us was hit. And then it gradually began to get dusk. And I'd never looked out the trench all day. And as it was getting dusk evening, I had a look out the back of the trench, where the Germans come from. And blimey, there they was again. A long, long row again, just walking. Not running anything, just gradually walking, because it was getting dark, you see. And airlines that ever did leave been filled up then, must have been, I should think. But they were just gradually walking, nobody fired at them, nothing. I thought, oh, hell. So, as they gradually got closer, I thought, oh, blimey. So, I climbed out the back of the trench, and when they got within about fifth, might have been 100 yards, or more or less than that, 50 or 60 yards. I climbed out the back of the trench and put my hands up in the air and slowly walked towards them. I didn't know whether I'd shove a bayonet through me guts or what they'd do. I just walked slowly to them. And it must have been an officer that I met first, because he gave me a slap across the face. And I knew afterwards I deserved it, because I'd got a lighted fag in me mouth. And how the hell would you know that? I'd got a lighted fag in me mouth, and he hit me across there because I'd got a lighted fag, and that burnt me face. I was having a good time. And he turned to two young Germans, and because I didn't know what he said. He said, now take these, you know, in his lingo, take this prisoner back. And that was it. Took me back and went down then into a, when we went 200 or 300 yards, just beyond where I'd shot these two chaps. Well, they were ambulance blokes picking the dead up, wounded, rotten bugger I was. But there you don't know, do you? They took me back down in this railway cutting. And that railway cutting run almost level, parallel then with the front line. And it was packed with troops. Now the hell could we have captured that? We'd all killed getting as far as we did. And if it had been another regiment with us then, we should have never have took that railway cutting. There was all along there, there was great big dugouts cut in the side of the railway, tunnelled into the ground, full of troops. And they took me along, and because as I told you before, I had to go then before, took me to the headquarters. That was a hell of experience.
Mm. Mm. Well, again, now these are the tapes that I haven't got the copies of, you see.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind sort of telling me that bit.
Which about?
Well, just, you know, continue the story. You went down to the headquarters.
I went there. And of course, I found out later where it was, you see. Where they took me. It was the headquarters. It was that part of the Hindenburg line was the headquarters. See? I didn't know that till they told me, or the Germans told me later on. I went down. They took me along. And in the opening, cutting the railway cutting, was a big opening, a load of troops in it. And we went in there, and one of these Germans, there were two young German kids, they were, about my own stamp. One of these kids opened a door at the back of this dugout, dug in the bank. He opened a door and went in and shut the door, and away he went. Well, now all this crowd, well, if I said a couple of dozen then in this dugout, they all clambered round, you know, English prisoner they'd got, and one of them could speak a little bit of English, spluttered it a bit, so I understood. So he told me, he said, we're the machine gun section, see, German machine gun section. I said, oh. I said, that's funny. I said, I'm a machine gunner too. I thought, well, bloody lie. I went with the machine gun. But anyway, I said, I'm a machine gunner as well. See, well, then that door opened at the back of the dugout, and called me and this other young German, went through and went along, ooh, ever such a long corridor, all lit up with electric light. And when we got to the end of the corridor, this young German knocked on the door. It was opened, and there was a blooming great room, carpet on the floors, chairs, a long table, sitting in armchairs the other side the table, was officers, staff officers, and this big bug in the middle with his old eyeglass, you know, it was the headquarters, I found afterwards. And this young German, these two young Germans marched me straight across the room to the table, to the middle in front of this senior officer, and they turned around, marched back to the door, quite a big room, long march back to the door, and this officer in the middle, what was the first thing he says? Oh, sprechen Sie Deutsch? I said, no. He said, parlez-vous français? I said, no. So then he said, Vars Regiment. I thought, that sounds like, what's your regiment? Anyway, I took it for that, so I turned my shoulder towards him, bent down, I said, Oxford and Books Light Infantry. He hit the table with both his fists, on what the hell for? He hit the table with both his fists, he shouted at these two kids. They didn't walk, they run. Across the room, grabbed me, twisted me round and bundled me out into this corridor. And do you know, I had to do a grin to myself. I thought, oh, hell, they're more frightened than I am. They're frit to death, these two kids was. And then it suddenly struck me. We went back along the corridor and all this crowd in there, these young German, this machine gun section, They got round, you know, I could imagine what it was. You know, what do you got to do with him? What's up? What did they say? You can just picture it, can't you? All these young Germans. And I thought, blimey, I wonder if that bloke's told him to take me out and shoot me. You know, it crossed my mind. I thought, blimey. But no, we went out, we went across the metals. They were all blew up, the metals was where shells had dropped in. And they never shot me. And then we climbed up the bank the other side and got up there all right. So I thought, well, I'm safe now. Now, when we got there up the top, we went a little way. Then we stopped and turned round. Now, do you want me to keep on with the tale?
Oh, yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
So I'll soon be had enough now. It's a bit tiring, but I can't carry on.
We've only got about another 5 minutes, I should think, on the tape.
All right, then. Well, then we turned round and looked across No Man's Land. See, because that would only be perhaps 300 or 400 yards or a quarter of a mile perhaps or so. I forget the distance from where their lines was in the No Man's Land. Well, all along No Man's Land, there wasn't a shot being fired, but it was lit up like daylight, because all the time you see from their trenches and our trenches, they kept firing star shells, and that lights up like electric lights in the sky, you know, them fire. Them star shells, they fire from a big gun, a revolver like. And now and again there would be a red one go up along the line, which signals for the artillery signals, I suppose. Well, when we looked across there, you could see all their blokes lying dead all over the place. It was lit up as clear as that. And as I told you on that other tape, if only an artist, a well-known artist, could have only stood there with us and painted that scene as it was there, and they took it back and hung it in the rooms or cabinet headquarters of other countries, they never dared declare another war if they sat and looked at that. Who the hell was that? Looking across No Man's Land, I said it. Been an artist there to paint that picture. And I know, I'm certain, they could have put all the colouring in, you know, the blokes, Germans in between the first and second line of theirs, and ours lying about. They daredn't have declared a war, not if they got any sense and see that hanging up, but never mind about that. I put a lot of things on them other tapes, but now I always remember, I think I've told you this before, that years later when we got old, my old darling, she always used to read the good book before we went to sleep, you know, and she always used to read it. I don't know what the hell that'll sound like when you get.
You can edit these things. You're just saying about your wife used to read.
Yes, she always used to read the good book a little bit, and then I fell asleep. But what I can recall mainly was a little bit she used to read as I passed through the valley of the shadow of death. I will fear no evil. Now then, I always remembered that, and you see an old dear used to read it, and I used to say then, I did pass through the valley of the shadow of death, and I felt no evil. Those people that I killed, deliberately killed, I didn't hate those chaps. I didn't know them. I didn't hate them. And as I've said before, I'm sorry and I'm ashamed I done it, because those young chaps might have been nice young chaps with a family of a couple of little kids and all that. You know, it's awful. There's nothing brave about it, heroes and cowards, there's no such thing. I don't believe it.
You were saying that you stood on the edge.
Yeah, we stood there and we looked across and then eventually we moved off. We wandered off, went some distance till we come to a farmhouse. And we went round the back of this farmhouse and one of these young kids, he got out my arm, the other one stepped back and this one got out my arm and led me up to this wall at the back of the house. I thought, oh blimey, not now. I thought, oh, they never took me all this way to shoot me. And this kid that took me to the wall, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know whether to have a go for it. And I thought, well, if I do, if I got away from both, I'm caught. I sort of give way. I thought, well, I can't do nothing. And this kid put his hand in his pocket, fetched out a packet of fags, and offered me one. Well, that's what caused it for me then, because going from one extreme to the other, I started to bawl like a great big baby. I couldn't help it, just for a few seconds. But it soon went off, and so I dived my hand in my pocket, fetched my old tin of woodbines out, and handed one each to them, and we all three stood there and had a smoke, enjoyed a woodbine. That was out of the tin of that chap that I told you died in the trench, you know, that I lit his fag and says, you are these. Well, it was a fag out of that tin. You want me to keep on now?
Yeah.
Well, because you can edit it, what I'm saying now, can't you? Miss that bit out, perhaps. But now, I sat to think a minute. Now, soon as we'd finished smoking these fags, we'd had a smoke, and so we wandered off. Because this was behind the lines, although we could see the trenches all from the other side of the farm. But then we wandered off into the night, like across country, because it was all wild open country. And we wandered off several fields, while we were just like kids, as you would be at home in peacetime, three of you going out for a drink at night. There was no hatred, nothing between us, just pally, just like three pals together. And now, before I carry on to tell you from where we moved then, I'm going to tell you this. In the front line of the trenches in those days, that was our middle of the war almost, or just beyond, they were nearly all like ourselves, young, healthy, strong chaps, just thrown slap in a war. Well, you went there to kill each other, but you didn't go there to hate one another. It was your job. And, well, we wandered off for some distance. Then we come to a narrow road, and we was going along that narrow road, and a long way off, I could hear some singing, and it must have been roads some distance apart that gradually began to get closer together, because the singing got louder, and I listened. I thought, oh, hell. They were singing at the top of the voice, singing Tipperary. Now, that was a mob, you see. They'd been caught in a batch somewhere, a bit further along the line, and all grouped together, and they were marching them back further behind the line to a centre somewhere. And, because me being with these two, oh, blimey, I tried, I kept beckoning, I couldn't speak another language. I kept beckoning them, they knew what I meant. I wanted them to let me, take me to join them, this crowd of ours. But no, they wouldn't, no, you know, they made it pretty plain they couldn't do that. So I found out why later, naturally, because I was being taken back to their headquarters behind the line for interrogation. That was the object of what was being done, but I didn't know. And we carried on some distance, and we branched off, and the singing died right away. They singing, because they must have turned off to another road somewhere. But anyway, as we carried on, we were going down this road, and I heard a hell of a lot of rumbling, and it kept closer, closer, and then I found out what it was then. It was batteries of German artillery being brought up from the rear. You see, they was all horse-drawn, and then the leading horses had a rider on, like our old artillery in the First War. They were all the same. And me and these other two kids, we had to stand on the side of the road to let them go by. There was no footpath, naturally. And one of the leaders on one of the horses, I got my eye cocked on him, and one of them leaned over. He must have been a nasty bit of goods, because he let fly at me with his whip, and I see him do it, and I ducked. These other two kids, they didn't see him, so of course they caught it. Oh, blimey, all the hollering and shouting. In their lingo, they must have been had a good old swearing match. But anyway, that went by, and of course we wandered on then into the night, oh, for quite a long, long way. And we came to a village then, and we went to an old farmhouse in the village, and the back of them big farms, like country farms in England years ago, used to have what they call the dairy, you know, where they milked the cows and made the butter and all these here, what they call the dairy then. And down the middle of it was a long trestle table, see, and a form each side, and full of German troops. And these two young chaps took me into them, but they wasn't nasty at all. They sort of, you know, oh, blimey, you know, sort of a novelty for them. And they stood me at the back of a row. There was a row, and they stood me round the back of this row, one row of chaps, one row each side the table. Well, I'd got me back again the wall just behind them. And they was eating bread, black bread, and fat like lard. That's it, looked like lard to me. And that's what they was having, the supper. And, well, it couldn't have been breakfast because it was late. No, it'd be supper. It must have been getting late then. And when I stood against the wall, I felt one of these Germans catch up my leg, put his hand round the back of the form and caught up my leg. And I put my hand down, and he shoved a piece of black bread and a lump of fat on it in my hand. Now, that was a good thought, wasn't it? Now, where can you say there's any hatred then, eh? And that's what that chap done to me, that German. He done it not so as others could see him do it, sort of hid it behind him and put it in my hand. Bit of bread and fat. He must have thought I was hungry, because they hadn't got much food at all. Now, I'm going to break off again just for a minute and tell you this. Now, you see that kindness, don't you? I've told you on them the last tape I made, and I know I did, about kindness and so forth at the beginning. Now, that was kindness with real soldiers, see? Fighting men, I'll put it that way, them at the front, all infantrymen that were fighting. There was no hatred. Now, where you got your hatred was after you got back. Say that was with these older hands, say, that had been called up. Many of them had perhaps had the sons killed or something, and they'd got hatred galore, batches of them. You found kindness, I'll give you. Now there was hatred, cruelty, savage cruelty. At times, I've told you on them other tapes what happened with some of them. And starvation above all. Now, this is what I want you to make a special note of. Starvation. Civil population was starving later, absolutely. Now, the Red Cross, that's what I want you to notice. The Red Cross brought us back from starvation to physical fitness and well clothed and well fed. The British Red Cross, not any other country, the British. Now, we had everything in the way of food, that's when it arrived. But you had to live till the Red Cross got in touch with you. And I think I've told you on some of them other tapes. I was nearly 6 months before the Red Cross reached me. Now, during that time, I was physically fit when I was captured and, you know, well-trained and sport and everything, weighed round about 13 stone. Well, when my first parcel arrived, almost 6 months after being captured, I weighed 8 stone 5 pound, and you've got a picture of that, you know, ain't you? Mm. With me standing there, we're like a skeleton, with me hand on that little box. Mm. I weighed 8 stone 5 pound. Well, that was waiting for the British Red Cross to catch you, and that's where so many of ours died of starvation. They couldn't quite last out. Any amount died. I told you about it at Dolman, where they died there, and there was rows of coffins in the morning at Dolman in Westphalia, not over in East Prussia. Well, what happened then with us, they just started to reach our camp at Dolman. One or two parcels just began to arrive. Now, all at once we were bundled off and then away to East Prussia and so on and so forth, and the parcels went round and round Germany, and that made it late. So, let's have a rest a minute. Get me breath.
Okay.
I'll carry on now from that farm. That's it. Well, after, I told you about me standing against the wall, didn't I? Him giving me a bit of bread and that. Well, after, they only stopped there to have a natter. These two young chaps took me into this farm building where all these troops was, these German troops. And we came out of there after that. I'd been in there about half hour. We came out of there and then we wandered off into the night again. Well, we went quite a long, long way. And my old foot was hurting because I was wounded in the foot as well at the time, you know, a bit of shrapnel in the foot. And that bled, that was sore. But you don't take no notice of pain. And we wandered on and came to a large chateau. A great big house out in the country, and it was all marble steps leading, wide marble steps leading up to the front of the house, and we went there. One of these chaps went inside, he came out and he said something to the other German kid, but what they said I don't know, but we all three sat in a row on these stone marble steps outside the front of the building. And I must have been tired. Well, I'd had no sleep for 2 nights before the battle. And I went fast asleep. I got my elbows on me legs, went fast asleep. And when I woke up, it was broad daylight and all around they were jabber, jabber, jabber. I wondered where the hell I was, see, after sleeping. And there was all these Germans. They was all around, dozens of them. Well, there was a station there, must have been a Royal Crown station there, but they was all kind, not nasty. And I had breakfast with them. They give me a bowl full of stew.